Just for round of introductions, we're going to do it a new meeting, so we can sort of do the introductions again. Following Christian Chairperson. Next to me is Mr. Duncan Davis. So over to you, members.
Good afternoon. My close name is Sir, good afternoon.
Ricardo McKenzie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pierre Rose.
You too, introduction.
Good afternoon, David Lacay, Chairperson, Mr. Cape Gambling Basin Board.
Good afternoon, Zoe Seva, Office of the Board.
Good evening, Yvonne Skeppel, Office of the Board.
Evening, Claude Vassaday, Board Member.
Good evening, Nolio Lomagazi, Board Member with the Cape Gambling Investment Board.
Good evening, Julissa Cantano, Board Member.
Good evening, Mafani, Board Member.
Good evening, Meg Hassan, Office of the Board.
Good evening, Alan Matthews, Office of the Board.
Good evening, William Brothers, Office of the Board.
Good evening, Dana Mandela, Deputy Chair.
Thank you very much. We're going to do governance first. So we do the entire governance from page 29 to 46. Members, any questions on governance? Member Pierre Ace. Okay, Member Ace.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on page 42, there's reference to the Chief Executive Officer. Can we understand, what is the Chief Executive Officer appointed on a contract basis or permanent one? And then I see the succession plan that is in place for the position of Chief Executive Officer in accordance with the board succession plan. Maybe you can just elaborate on that a bit. How do you manage that part? That you refer to in the report here.
Questions on governance, Member Bevan?
Just a few items, Mr. Chair. Board member remuneration. I'd like to know what the other reimbursements are for.
Member McKenzie? Okay, that's the questions. Over to you, Mr. Lacay.
Chairperson, we will direct the questions to our particular HODs to answer, but directly I will answer. The CEO is appointed on a contract, and currently the CEO is on a 5-year contract which was renewed recently. Mr. Bowers, can you talk with regards to the succession planning of the CEO, please?
Thank you, Chair. The succession plan for the CEO is based obviously on around the permanent HODs at the board, where in the event that the CEO is on annual leave or is on break or away for business for the board, there's rotating HODs take control of the organization in the absence of the CEO and attend the relevant meetings on his behalf. In the event that the CEO's contract comes to an end and the board hasn't found a suitable person, there is permanent HODs that can take up his position on a temporary basis until a permanent person is found. Alternatively, the HODs that have been in acting capacities can take up the offer of position of CEO.
Member Chatham, on that question, Member McKenzie, do you have something on that question? A new question. Okay, just going to give Member Chatham and Member Hayes opportunity to ask on that question. Member Chatham?
Thanks, Chairperson. This talks to a succession plan, Chair. And I want to know this narration that there is there a document that speaks to that? Because it might be possible that if I say maybe I, on a number of occasions, the CEO is off and I come and occupy the position, the assumption might be that if the CEO, let's say, resigns, because I might have chair quite often, so it does not speak, what is the succession plan in this because this can create maybe tension within the institution if it's not properly outlined.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my understanding of the succession plan was really to plan when the person leaves. It's not an acting position plan. I mean, that's never the terminology that I've heard anywhere. If it's a succession plan, it's once the contract comes to an end, there's a process of taking over by somebody else in terms of maybe your employment equity targets and things like that. But, I mean, succession plan to plan for acting can never be that.
You are missing. If that question, I've got the two of you. Lakay, do you want to answer that question? Who's answering that of the succession plan?
I'll respond to that. Members, we cannot say that there is going to be the succession plan is not to have somebody specific prepared for that role. What we are then definitely through the succession plan is to ensure that any of our HODs are skilled throughout the plan so that when we have, should the CEO's position become vacant, that we are able to recruit out of internal resources any of the existing HODs. And also when we have acting in the absence of the CEO currently, we have a chair where different HODs are given the opportunity, which is part of the plan, to capacitate them for the eventuality when the vacancy should arise, Chairperson.
Is it on that? Member Mitchell first to be moving.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I note the comment made. If we could add the resolution, could we get an HR policy that guides the appointments on this? Because with respect, it feels like it's not going to be transparent, and I don't want transparent and open, because you can't assume that the next CEO will come out of that group. So in order to not have a dialogue on this, if we could just get the HR policy that guides that decision.
You ask for that, Member Mosekwa?
Partly I'm covered with the policy. We have to look at it. But the worrying factor is that if the position of the CEO within the organization is important, and you have the HODs that you feel one of them can occupy the position, why don't you hire one of the HODs there to occupy the position rather than having the competing contest towards the because it's sort of creating a loophole for, I don't want to say the favoritism, but it's like can end up being the favoritism that one is going to be occupying in that position. If I'm listening wrong, I might be wrong with what I'm saying, but creating the expectations from, and if it doesn't happen, the people that are going to report to that CEO, they're going to be, now I'm talking about the reality of the issue, they're going to be unhappy about the person, why they've been contesting for how many months before that CEO is then hired. So it creates the sort of instability within
there. That is false. They're just getting other measures in case he's not there. But the committee saying this terminology that you use is not a normal terminology, and we want you to give us the plan or the policy pertaining to that, that we can understand what we have for further engagements. We don't want to engage you, but I think just for us to get that policy will assist.
Chairperson, thank you for that. I think we just need to address some of the misunderstandings I think the members must understand. Particularly when a member myself says about favoritism and all that. The way we are addressing it by giving each of our HODs an opportunity to act, that eliminates favoritism. Because we're not having one person act all the time, which would then say that person is being earmarked to become the CEO.
I think we're going to stop there, because the problem that we have is, Member Mitchell raised a different point.
Yeah.
What if outsider applies then there's bias towards your HNTs because they already skilled for that. But I think we mustn't have that debate now. I think let's get the policy and then debate it for another engagement on another time. Is that fine? Member Mitchell?
Okay, I hear what you're saying. I want to clear up the misunderstanding then, and that with respect it was said that it is part of succession planning.
Yeah.
So we, like, nobody disputes, if the CEO is not there, somebody needs to act. That's normal. It happens in any department, any organization. But the fact that you refer to succession planning creates the impression that the next CEO will come out of the HODs.
Again, it needs to be aligned to the Labour Act in everything that they are saying, because it cannot be that way. There is a Labour Act that everybody has to be allowed to have a chance in that. Now, if you put succession plan closing everything out, that's where we are having a problem of.
I don't want Mr. Lepkin to answer that, because then we would have more questions on that. Let's move on to the following question, the following answer. Yes, the following answer. Not new question, following answer.
Chair, just to Member Beer, I have a question as to whether other rebursing entails. That is basically when we reimburse the board members, for example, when they travel for board meetings, then we reimburse them at the rate per kilometer, and also, for example, if they incur parking fees, just those reimbursements.
Can I understand what I've just been told? So, Chair, that these people are remunerated because they are board members, but they're also being remunerated for attending meetings and for parking.
They are remunerated because they have to travel to the board meetings for the kilometers that they basically.
Member Mitchell, I have a question on this, because, I mean, if you look at the board meetings, the chairperson gets 6,000 rand, and then the vice chairperson gets 4,700. So you say additional to that, if they travel to a board meeting and then incur parking, then that is additional, the additional money that they get. Let me get Member Mitchell first, and then Member Maseko.
Chair, I'm also on the board meetings, but I want to take it a little bit further, if you would allow me. So I want to know, out of these meetings, how many was held at the office? Because the second paragraph stipulates that there's a fixed amount of 4,738.72 for the meeting being at the office. So, and the minute it goes to outside of the office, then all these add-ons come. Or am I misunderstanding?
I'll just wait a minute. Member Maseko, you've got the same question.
I'm still busy. Because so how does that 4,700 rand relate to the 6,098 rand, for example, and I'm using the chairperson because that's first, that remuneration would be paid to the chairperson. Where does that 4,700
That's a board members getting that money, no? But you can help us now, Member Maseko.
Thank you very much. I'm just trying to find out. So on the board committee and other events, the hourly amount is 592.34 per hour across the board. For even the chairperson and the vice chairperson, or the whoever is acting as a chairperson. Then, if that is the case, the difference between when is a normal meeting of the chairperson and the vice chairperson, what is the chairperson doing that is different in the same meeting? That is different, that there is a more amount to the chairperson than the, it goes with the responsibility, or what is it that is quantifying the extra amount to that effect from the deputy, from the vice chairperson.
Can we just answer that with some clarity? Okay.
Chair, just in terms of the first question, so the board members' fees of 4,700 if the kilometre is included. But then the board also sits on, the board members sits on committee meetings. And if you look at the first bullet point, it says the remuneration for other meetings and events, such as committee meetings and public hearings, for example, is based on an hourly rate, which in addition to the time extended, extend also to time travel, preparation time, and reimbursement for kilometers traveled. So all the board meetings are held at the office, and they don't get any kilometers for the board meetings. But any other meetings, and the committee meetings are quarterly meetings, so there's, I think, an average 3 members on each committee meeting, and those are the costs that we are referring to here.
So are these, are you saying that these committee meetings doesn't happen at the office?
It does happen at the office, but it says there's a difference between the committee meeting remuneration fee and a board fee. The board fee is inclusive of everything, your preparation time, your kilometers, but when you attend a committee meeting, you get remunerated based on the hour plus the kilometers that you travel.
But with respect, this remuneration is payable up to the equivalent of a maximum of 8 hours plus kilometers traveled. So again, there would be a standard maximum that you would be able to get, am I understanding it correctly? Regardless of it being a 20-hour meeting or a subcommittee meeting, or does it go beyond that 8 hours?
Chair, the 5,600 is an hourly rate, and that is for sitting fees for the committee. So it's only, they can't earn more in a committee meeting than they would have earned for a board meeting. So it's basically 8 hours multiplied by the 5 to 9, which gets you to the 4,700. But then in addition to that, we reimburse you for the kilometers that you travel for the committee meeting. That's what it means when it says plus kilometers traveled.
Okay. Sorry, the last one, I don't want to
get
the dialogue.
Okay.
The last one. But then the last bullet point, with on kilometers, it says instances where the routes varied from the usual route to the office of the board meeting. So if you live at point A and you would travel down Voortrekker Road to point B to the office for a board meeting, how is that varied from a committee meeting that you've just said is also at the office?
I think we just need to put this in perspective. For board meetings, each board member is paid a standard board fee for 8 days, which includes preparation. For committee meetings, you have to specify your hours that each member took to prepare, the hours travel, plus the hours that the meeting, the duration of the meeting. The meeting may be, let's take a practical example. The member spent 2 hours preparing, going through the report. The member traveled for 1 hour to the board meeting. That's 3 hours, and the meeting duration was 2 hours. So that's 5 hours. That's what the member gets remunerated for. He had to travel, and the office computes the shorter distance between the member's residence and the office of the board, okay, the shortest route. So let's say that's 35 kilometers to the office and back again. So the member has to travel 35 kilometers. That's the total that the member gets remunerated for. If the member decides to go from, let's say, Milnerton, to Balfour and then come to the office, he gets remunerated for 35 kilometers. So it's the only time where it would vary, and the only committee that may undertake meetings at different venues is our casino committee, where we will go to Mykonos in Langebaan, and the member will be remunerated again for the shortest distance from his place of residence to the meeting and back. That is where that standard will differ. Otherwise, it will always be the same, Chair. The rate is also determined by the member's particular vehicle. It's not a standard rate. You get paid the same rate as what I. Depends on the vehicle that I have, and that is the SARS rate that is applied.
Okay.
I must give him a mistake then, member. So I remember this opportunity before I give you again, member. It's the same issue, eh?
I think, Chair, our base says that we need to really have more info. In fact, we need to a workshop about it because there's a lot of loopholes attached to this that there's no understanding. Because if I read the first bullet under this, it says that you even get remunerated for the time traveled, plus the kilometers, plus so, and at the bottom is something else. So we need to be workshopped on that fact. Otherwise, we're going to have the questions about this roads again and again and again. And I suggest that we do that. But the question that I want to ask, what is the maximum amount that has ever paid to a board member for going to the meeting on a day?
Not a normal board meeting, other meeting. Preparation time, all those other times.
Eight hours is the maximum that you get paid for.
The amount
would be what that rate is. If a normal member, 4,738 for a meeting that may have lasted more than 8 hours, including all the other time.
More than that.
It won't be more than that. So one, if I have to... I can make a practical example. I'm the chair and I've been here since 8 o'clock this morning. I'm going to receive 6,098 rand, although I've spent 10 hours in this building today. I'm going to get up to a maximum of 8 hours only, chair. And each member so will get up to 8 hours maximum per event.
First member, Charles, and the member is?
Chair, I just want to ask Ms. Blessing. This term of the preparation time, I think it's a good thing, I must say, to the board. It's a good thing I wish they can give us, also the members. Because the number of documents and books that we need, especially in Kofa, we really need this preparation time. So,
salaries at all, so they only get remunerated for the time that they actually put in. No additional time.
I just want to ask
you,
in terms of what time you were members who are fluent in English or the language which some of the reports are written. So some members will read quickly, some members take time.
One moment, that is a question Mr. Seko asked. What was We now talk about the board meeting, we talk about the traveling, preparing documents, parking and all of that, and the meeting with maximum 8 hours. What was the most you paid as the vigil for that? That is the question we asked.
That is the question that I answered. What we need to distinguish is between expenses that the member incurs in traveling and the remuneration for the service that is being provided. For the meeting, preparation, travel time, including the duration of the meeting, a maximum of 8 hours remuneration for the chair, for member, whatever the rate is applicable. The expenses refers to the cost of the vehicle that the member drives. So
we know that. What we're asking is, what was the most spent on a meeting like that?
Okay.
That's what we're going to ask, because then it's for me more sense, rather than board meetings and pay that amount as to have this other cost. That's our point we're going to make.
Okay, Chair. It's, well, because it differs from member to member, we're all in different places. So, yeah, if we have to take the furthest distance a member has to travel, then we are going to say we're talking about the cost per member, not the payment to the particular member. Now, you must distinguish between that, because we have a board member that travels from Johannesburg to our meetings. Right, sir? He was appointed as an ordinary resident of the Western Cape, but the board has to pay the travel costs of the member. That member travels from Johannesburg, so the board is responsible for his costs. So you can take an air ticket that we pay for, and one has to add that cost. The member will then be remunerated for the meeting, which is the normal remuneration. If you add all of that then as a total cost for attending a meeting, I don't have the exact, because the etiquette will vary from vary, but you must add that as a cost to attend a meeting, Chair.
Can I just say this before you ask? Can I just say this? And that's precisely what we're asking. So does that gentleman still claim, if it's a normal board meeting, do you still incur the cost for traveling by aeroplane?
We have to pay the travel cost to the meeting.
Member Maseko, Member Mitchell? You first, Member Mitchell.
Okay.
Thank you very much. The question that I asked was so specific of the amount, the maximum amount that you have ever paid for a board member in the meeting or in the event. It's just X amount.
They don't have the amount there, they don't, but we can either, as a resolution, ask them to send us the expenditure, not a board meeting, an other board meeting with all these costs, with traveling and all of that, or we can ask the documentation, or we can have another session where we engage them. Maybe they must send us documentation, and then if we want a session after that, we can have that.
You want to answer it?
You want to answer?
Yeah, I just want to clarify quickly. When the member says that's been paid to a board member, when we pay the cost for the board member in Johannesburg to fly down, that's not reimbursement. That is part of the board's travel cost. So that one is not being reimbursed to that particular board member. He is only being paid for the fee that he attends the meeting for.
We understand that.
Okay. Thank you very much for that answer, but I want to latch on to what member Chacham was saying. Who guides how much preparation time? Who's the determining factor to say, okay, so member Beerwinkel, she can study documents in an hour and I need 2 hours. Who's the same document? And I'm being sincere when I ask this question, who determines that? Yeah, that's the one thing, Chair. And then, Chair, just as a practical example, And I am sorry for doing this, but I just wanted to get my head around. So, Mr. Farku attended 24 meetings, board meetings, right? So, according to my calculation, Mr. Farku, at the board meeting rate, would have gotten remunerated at 113,000 and odd rand, right? So that tells me that the other 115,000 rand is made up of, so the amount is more for additional committees, for all that other stuff than what actually actual board meeting would cost the board. So, and the committees to me is add-ons to the actual functioning of the board meeting. So, I don't know, because, and Chair, with respect, I don't know how we're going to deal with this, but every year we have the same discussion on exactly this in scope. Thank you.
Okay, let him just answer and then we can move on, because we can have another session on this.
Chair, in terms of Mr. Farquhar specifically, due to the fact that he needs to fly from Johannesburg, attends the meeting, fly back to Johannesburg, he gets 8 hours whether he attends the board meeting or committee meeting, and that's why you can't say board meetings multiply by the rate, because he is being remunerated 8 hours for committee meetings as well, because he needs to travel from and to Johannesburg.
Last one on this question, please.
Then Chair, can I humbly and respectfully request that those things get declared to SCOPA in this report? This is what we prepared. So with the asterisks, they should have been declared with respect. Because we can't smile and go and find out that Mr. Park, who is the
individual. Just stop here, because otherwise we're gonna have another session on this where we're gonna invite you back to clarify this. Otherwise we're gonna go on this matter all the time. Can we just move on? Okay, we will respond and then we'll answer in the next
one. Chair, with the members are given the opportunity to post their questions. I think with due respect, the members must also give us an opportunity to respond if we believe that a response is required. And with all respects, Chair, with regards to the reports that we submit, we must understand also that there is disclosure that we have to comply with. We have no problem with providing any additional information to clarify any matter. The way the remuneration is disclosed in this report is the requirement, the manner in which we have to disclose it. Since the remuneration is made up of a few different components, board meetings, committee meetings, and committee meetings is regarded as part of the board's functions. That's why it's remuneration. We have no problem in breaking it up and showing what was paid for a board meeting and what was paid for committee meetings to make up the total. And we will happily provide that information in the format, and should you want to engage further after that information share, you're most welcome to do that as well.
Thank you, members. Can we move on? Is there any other questions? Member? Oh, you're moving on? Is there any questions on governance? Governance still? Member McKenzie, then Member Mchacha on governance? Member McKenzie, I said Member McKenzie. Then Member Mchacha, then you don't know, you're not. Member McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think on the internal audit committee, and it's not a fetch question, it's a general question. We have the external auditor who is the internal auditor for the board, is it NHS?
Just to assist the member, we have an internal auditor which is
outsourced.
It's an outsourced, yeah.
Yes, sir. That's what I mean, yeah. And then on the external auditor, which is the auditor general in conjunction with Mazars or something, is that the best model for governance, that's from the chairperson's perspective, to outsource your internal audit or can we in future perhaps make use of the department of the previous audit committee? And from the AG's perspective, I mean, what does the other public entities do? Their internal audit function, is that also outsourced to private companies or other organizations? And then the total cost of the audit fee, the 1.3 million, 1.2 something, is that including the external, internal auditor and the outsourced part? Thanks.
Yes, Chair, in terms of the audit fee, that total amount is included, the external audit fees of 1,087,000 million, and then the internal audit fees was 400,500 for the young regular, so that total is both of them.
Chairperson, if you look at other public entities, most of them have outsourced internal audit functions.
Member Tassel? I'll touch on Member Maslori first and then Member Tassel, because I gave.
Thank you, Member. Chair, I'm on page 39. I just want to understand this the sentence, the second last sentence that says the board takes cognizance of the risk to which it is exposed, but because it is a public entity and works with public funds, the board's risk appetite is low. Any residual risk that is above the board's appetite can only be accepted after sign off by the chief executive officer.
Now, once you find out that you do have the reason audit committee that is working with you, that also it identifies the risk. Does the risk that they identify go through the CEO to approve before you have appetite for it, or how does it work?
Chasson?
Answer the question. Yes, Chair, page 42. It's in relation to social responsibility, which is Law 15.
Chair, I'm aware that the board does not have its own separate social responsibility. I'm aware of that. And I know mostly it's taken by the casinos there, where they are. But my question is, Chair, isn't it the casino supposed to stand the problem for the women? And I would assume that many people sometimes would go to Canada, others from Holland, if they are not going to Worcester, they would go to different places. But my experience with our visit in Mosulbin, in terms of the social responsibility, we got a report that they are doing very well, social responsibility, but that social responsibility is within the paradigm of Southern Cape. And Mosulbin in particular, in terms of the activities which they think of, and they've taken us to sleep. So I'm now asking the Chair, it means that Mitchell, who's coming from Fort Worth, is not going to benefit in all these social responsibilities, because in Fort Worth there is no casino. Unless I was a new one, I don't know. So I just want to understand this view scored. So I'm trying to understand, because part of this economic development is supposed to end at the quicker effect in terms of the whole economic development of the province. So how does it work that other regions who might not have customers being covered?
Okay. Member Mitchell, you have a question? Can I ask?
Chair, I'm also on page 42. firstly, under point 30, it's actually in the annual report that succession planning is in place for the position of the CEO in accordance with the board succession plan. So I don't want to take us back to that discussion. I just wanted to, for the record, state it's actually now here. So that's very important that we just follow that up. Chair, the social responsibility, although I understand that it's not the role of the board to necessarily or have any social responsibility programs, but majority of our poorer communities or community of poorer residents in the province are normally are trapped with this gambling thing. So what kind of, I don't know, call it an educational thing, because it's not an educational, but awareness program gets initiated from the board side to try and say, you know what, this is the number that you can call for help and. And then the same with under corporate citizenship with regards to the APP being aligned to the Western Cape Provincial strategic goals that creates opportunities for young people and for growth and jobs, and particularly young people. How many jobs have been created, or what plans have been put in place to create those jobs? Let me just check before I go on, also that I don't have to ask again. Thank you.
Okay, you can ask. Chair, I'll ask our CEO, our CFO, just to respond on the risk appetite, and I will respond with regards to social responsibility, and I'll just ask Mr. Bowers to respond to this regards to the board awareness programs, and then we'll talk about under the social responsibility about the jobs. So the CFO just to talk about the risk appetite.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the risk, EXCO, so the risk management is delegated to the CEO and board, and then the EXCO as the executive team will then identify the risk. The risks are then reviewed by the audit committee, and ultimately the board approves the risk register. So all the risks are being approved by the board, even though that is delegated to the CEO, but ultimately the board approves all the risks, the risk register. Thank you, Chair.
Just
on page 43, Chair, just a reminder that when we get to that next presentation that we were so confused about the remuneration, I just want to alert the board to the paragraph under number 18 regarding remuneration, that they look at everything that's in there and bring that along as well, because there's quite a few things in there that's necessary for us to consider.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Members, with regards to the social responsibility, particularly Member Tsatsa, yes, the casinos in the five regions that we have them go not just within the closer proximity of the casino, but the entire district municipalities around the casino. Now, you are correct in saying that if you take a region where there is no casino, and if you particularly look at Beaufort West as a region, there is not going to be a direct licensee that is going to have such social responsibility programs in that region. Because in terms of the bid document of the casino, it is to look after the region, the citizens within the region of the casino. Although some of them have programs in outlying areas as well. And this is what the board is also looking at through the LPM, which is the Low Payout Machine Program, to empower people in outlying regions So it is not concentrated in your, let's call it your urban areas as well, but in your suburban areas and outlying areas as well. We have the two route operators who run the RP machines, which will have programs wider spread than what you will have with than the casinos. So yes, then there is, because of the location, that the outlying areas may not benefit to the extent that the areas closer to the casinos will benefit. That is because of the nature of the structure of it. And then if we can just stop up to with the job creation, currently there is not, let's say, any new jobs being created. The industry has come to a plateau. There is no growth in the industry. The only new jobs that may be created now is when you have more RPM machines issued to a particular license applicant, and they will create new jobs through that process. The casinos, they created the jobs when they were founded, when they were established, and they have jobs, so it's an ongoing process. It is not new job creation. It's not like new industries that are being born that are bringing jobs to the market. They have been established, and that is the only one. But the casinos indirectly are creating job creation through their service providers. They are continuing to provide jobs to their direct service providers as well as the indirect service providers. And then in terms of job creation, we must look at the educational side, where all of the casinos have programs where they will educate people who may be able to go and seek a job. And also what the board has been doing lately is to have sustainable projects in terms of jobs and education, so that a person is not just given a grant for this year, but it's taken through a, let's call it a lifelong process from primary school to high school, where that person is then able to go also and to perhaps create jobs for himself. We are looking more at now entrepreneurship rather than just pure education in the sense of that you are going through high school and thereafter you're going to stand in an employment queue. So the board's interaction with the licensees are driving job creation in a different direction. We aren't able to measure that as yet, but I can just tell you recently, as recent as this Friday, the board, the committee of the board visited a school in Heidelberg, where six matric learners were part of the consumer studies. And those learners will complete their studies at the end of this year, and then they will be able to become entrepreneurs because of the skills that they have been given through the project that Grand West Casino is actually running. They are, when I say this, that they will be able to start entertainment or support entertainment. They will be able to start jobs as chefs, businesses as chefs, as cooks and that type of thing, because the program provided the skills, the equipment to provide those people in that direction. And the other licensees are embarking on the same kind of projects. It's something recent that the board or the committee of the board had embarked upon, so one will be able to measure this kind of success in a number of years. But as I said, if we can just take the six, those are six people who have been given skills to a particular project that will be able to follow that project, sir.
Member Chatham, his hand was up for long. Then Member Mitchell, then Member
Mosek. So, Chair, before we formed that, there was the board awareness program. that Member Mitchell asked about, if we can just respond as you go to that.
Thank you, Chair. As of mid last year, the board changed its focus in terms of awareness from training, especially in SAFs, to focusing more on schools and communities, poorer communities in particular, as mentioned by the member. The board has, with the permission of Western Cape Education Department, been given access to schools in areas like Sirius Robertson, Bonnievale, Montague, Booster, where we inform the learners of the dangers of irresponsible gambling and also the fact that gambling is not permitted if you're under 18. We also have speakers there from the South African Responsible Gambling Foundation that indicate to learners that if they are aware of in their community or in their families that they that there may be a problem gambling, that they then report it to the teachers and information is then supplied to them. Give that to those communities. The board is also part of the Thusong outreach program with the provincial government, where we go to the communities and we present to them information on the board on illegal gambling, on irresponsible gambling, and we also, for the past period, have been in the Bito, Kanaland, Dede River, and West Coast municipalities.
Will that member touch on?
Chair, just on the issue that was raised earlier on of the job creation, it's an assumption, Chair. Let's agree. It's an assumption that those 6 young people will actually, when they finish, be able to start, let's say, their companies and probably employ other people and have companies that they run. I can tell you, Chair, with studies done on this, if there are 100 people who have gone to an entrepreneurship program, in the next 2 years, you will find 10 people only who are still alive. In the next 4 years, you will be lucky if the systems are correct to have 3 people still alive. That's our reality in South Africa. And the studies prove to that. The issue, Chair, that I want to ask, are there mechanisms that have been set up by the board in terms of startup, let's say all those companies of 6 people, how much is that? Is there a mentorship program that is designed for them? Which companies are involved in those mentorship programs? Or which individuals who have been trained as mentors who are involved in that program? Because it's not an assumption that once you finish the training, you'll be able to stand up on your own and start a business. In particular, young people must be taken through. So I just want to ask if the board has a program in that direction. The last thing, Chair, that I want to raise in terms of the social responsibility that I was initially talking about. Chair, Mr. Leke, it's an assumption that people who have these machines, let's say assumption in Beaufort West, will do social responsibility. It's a wrong assumption. Because those people, first of all, there is no probably a law or guidance under you as a board that says this is how these people should be able to do social responsibility.
social responsibility out of those machines. And also, I don't hear you saying that you have a directive that has been given to these institutions, casinos, what that says, your casino, in terms of your area of jurisdiction, kindly make a program in this area because it needs some social responsibility program, and there is no casino in that district. And I'm raising again the issue of what was the most area that needs support, and my worry is that none of these activities speak to that. And I don't seem to see to hear from you that you have a direction that actually tells the customers. Because what I want to know, Chair, how much is being spent in Beaufort West in all this casino activity, in terms of social responsibility? It's one area, Beaufort West, where young people, night in, day, where we are told of most ill things that are happening, from drugs and many other things that I want to mention here that affects young people. And I can tell you now, there are many people from Beaufort West who spend their money in Worcester casino, and probably many other casinos. So, Chair, I am not pleased with the answer at the moment because it does not speak to really what I want to hear in terms of the social responsibility. It can't be that social responsibility must only look at the close proximity of that particular institution.
Okay, so we're still sticking to governance because you're taking a broader social responsibility. Mr. McKay explained that, but I'll give him a second and then Mr. McKay can explain it again and then we can move on. Member Sekou?
Thank you very much. Chair, on the issue of the social responsibility, the licensed owners are the ones who are doing it. If maybe we can get the list of the what is it that they've been doing, and maybe answer now of how are you monitoring as you give the license? How are you monitoring that those casinos that are getting the licenses or those are really doing the social responsibility? And the other one, in the answer of Bonnievale and the Ashton, as you do the awareness, how are you evaluating the impact it made to those communities to see that you have paid? I tend to believe that as you go there, you get paid to there is a mine or there is a cost attached to that. How are you evaluating if there is an impact to that effect of what you are doing, so that you don't do the tick box every year, say I did Bonnievale, now I'm going to go to Citrus, even though the problems are the social ills that the casinos should be adding value to, attend to the other things that starts from the escalate to go to the other. And the other thing that I want to also wish for, Chair, through you, if we can get the, I don't know if already the standing committee there has it, but I wish if we can get the policy attached to the social responsibility of giving the licenses. What did you put in there, and the specifics of how do they go about that? You can quantify it as social responsibility. If they stood at the clinic and they did sue for about 2 days, is that social responsibility to you? Or if not, what explanation or what do you quantify as the social responsibility?
And on their corporate citizenship check, on their number 3, page 42, the increase of wellness, safety, and paper social ills, out, and I mean, member asked the issue of the ATP. I would appreciate maybe if we can get it also from the side that how are you aligning, can get the document to the state, you don't have to tell us that. How the preparation that you have to align your the APP to the strategic plans of the Western Cape provincial government to that effect. Do you get what I mean? Okay, on page 42, let me put it straight. You say the annual performance plan of the board is aligned to the Western Cape provincial strategic plan, which comprises the 5 provincial strategic goals, and then one of them is the number 3, increase wellness, safety, and tackle social ills. So I want, if you can give us a document to see what is it that we have to the effect. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Member Bell.
Just for clarity on what Mr. Kay said, I hope I didn't hear you say that LPM machines or putting LPM machines out there is a manner to create jobs. I hope that's not what I heard you say. And if you didn't, I also don't want you to encourage, I don't want to encourage you to use LPM machines as a way of empowering or job creation or enriching anyone in a community, because it doesn't. It will disempower the poorer community because of the fact that, and you know the argument that we have about LPM machines and what it does, disempower the poorer person because of the low payout that it does, and so they feel it's okay, I can go and use this little money that I have there. Already you've heard the reports about what's happening in Beaufort West. We don't want people there to still go to LPM machines. Please, LPM machines are not the answer to lead to a job creation.
Thank you. Ms. Monkwe.
Chairperson, let's just go back to Member Chata when we spoke about the social responsibility and the job creation. Chair, everything is based on an assumption. But there's a fact also. It's factual that 6, just for this one instance, practical example, 6 learners will be qualified to be able to start businesses. We're not saying they are going to start jobs. Part of the program is the preparation to empower them to be able to do that. We as a board do not have the capacity to facilitate funding or anything. That is not our responsibility. Our responsibility is to ensure that our licensees are engaged in programs for sustainable education, for sustainable job creation. If they comply with that, and it's also part of the question is, how do we do that? It is part of the burden of the casinos when they apply or bid for their license. It was part that said we will spend 1.5 or 0.5% of our after-tax profits on social responsibility. So that particular number is the minimum number or value that they should spend on social responsibilities. Most of our licensees spend more than just the minimum amount. There is also different qualify or different factors that apply to different casinos. The one may be 0.5%, the other may be 1%, depending on the time that the bid was done. One of our food operators had a once-off commitment of X amount which they paid into social responsibility, and they do not have ongoing social responsibility. So it depends on the licensee itself. But the question also that Member Maseko had, how do we monitor that? Our casino committee regularly engages with the casinos. Every quarter we have a meeting at a different casino chair where that committee where the meeting takes place comes to the committee meeting and reports on their social responsibility and takes the members to visit actual sites. And so and here we cover all of the casinos for their social responsibility programs. Also the route operators, when they come to the meetings at the office, we arrange for visits to the sites that they have also indicated in their reports to the committee to go and have factual visits at these sites. See. So there's ongoing reporting to the board through the committees, what they do every quarter, and factual visits to identified sites. We can't visit all of them. We identify which sites we want to go and see, and the committee members go and visit those sites. I think some members of SCOF have been invited to attend and had their last visit in the Garden Route region. The responsibility members came to the meeting to address the members of the committee, their chair. So.
Thank you, members. Can we move on? Member Tatum, last question on this governance.
It's not a question, Chair. I just want to encourage the chairperson. Maybe on this, because it's the gambling board and the racing board and the horse racing, you know. So I think I want to encourage, maybe we must not look on these issues in terms of job creation and only focus on the on casinos. Look at the racing. Because I can tell you, if you can just invest some time and plan properly, you can be able to absorb many young people who are interested in either grooming, in doing different things in that particular issue of race, horse racing. And there's quite a lot, and many young people in terms of interaction, we have many young people who are much, I go to Eastern Cape, now the horse racing is much popular in Eastern Cape. I see many young people organizing horse racing themselves in Eastern Cape. So I'm saying maybe the focus also should not be only casinos. Let's look at other avenues of creating job creation for young people.
I just want to tell the member, yes, it's not just the casinos. The question was based around the casinos, and that was our response. The broader program includes the horse racing and bookmakers as well, Chair. So our answers were direct. But also is that it's not just job creation. That is a specific focus. But the social responsibility goes much broader than that. There are non-profit organizations such as religious organizations and other institutions, sporting bodies, that are also assisted through the program, Chair.
Let's move to finances. Right, any questions on the Form E financial information? Member Ace first, Member Ace, then Member Mitchell, then Member Beaverville. Member Ace first.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to make a recommendation. We can engage with it now, but that we get a full report from the board on page 54 on the contingent liability that occurred, and that we get the reason for that, the way it's going to be addressed and remedied, maybe the number of LPM operators, the way forward. But we, as SCOPA, get a full report from the board as soon as possible in terms of that whole process, please.
Okay. It's the same question, Member Beaverville.
Yes, I want to add to that, Chairperson.
Okay, add.
Based on the way that we normally get reports here and the questions that we
need to drag out more information. Can this report please play devil's advocate and think what extra information is needed for anybody to pick this document up and read it and understand what we're trying to say? Please.
Member Mitchell was up, and then Member Sutton. Member Mitchell, do you have questions for?
Yeah. Chair, thank you. I want to. I want to go to the notes. Page 86. Under leave payment, right? There's an increase of 300,000 rand. So I just want to find out what is the process, because obviously when leave is an actual, because you don't know when a staff member will resign and needs to be paid out. So what is in place to monitor the leave? I don't know how to explain this, but is there a structured process to make sure that, because leave becomes a liability. So how do you manage that liability so that it's a constant, if you know what I mean? I know certain cases you can't, but it accumulates. So how do you ensure that it doesn't accumulate? Because it's quite a big difference from the previous year. And then, Chair, that's just me being pedantic now, but there's a typo under the bonus for the Manager of Human Resources for 2018 in the annual report. With regard to the staff welfare, what is staff welfare? Because there's also a significant increase from 2017 to 2018, from 37,790 rand to 217,000. So I just wanted to know what that was about. And then, Chair, if you go to page, and I'll take this back, but to page 64, there's a paragraph just on top of page of number 5 that says the over expenditure of 463,060 rand in respect of personal cost is due to the following. An additional 8 meetings were held by the board and its committees to give effect to the board's statutory mandate. Now, I just need to understand, if it is statutory, what could that not have been planned? What changed for it to be 8 additional meetings? Because 463,000 is it's quite a big, it's not a once-off additional meeting that needed to be that you needed to fit in. Could this not have been planned? Is there something other than the statutory, because statutory to me needed to be planned ahead and then in advance as part of the meetings. And then
ask for a report on that. Do you want to answer now? Because Member Ace asked for a report.
Yeah, yes, Member Ace asked for a report, and I want an answer on this one.
You want to answer on
this? Yes. Why it was not reported? Then we found it again this year, because now it has been raised, we are told, by the CFO.
What I'm saying, Member Ace asked, Member Chacha, Member Ace asked them to give us a report on that. How they, so Member Ace asked in his open question a report, they must send us a report on that. How, all the whole process where we are and how they're going to rectify. So he asked that question, but he asked a report on that, so they're going to send us a report on that.
The other issue that I want to raise, Chair, is the payslip 63. I see, Chair, that the government grant from Jason Popper on the transfers revenue, government grant. I just want to understand, Chair. In terms of grants, is there any possibility going forward where the institution, a possibility where the institution would be able to stand on their own without the government grant? That's my question.
Okay, thank you.
We thank the members for the questions. Most of it will be answered by our CFO. Thank you that we can take the opportunity to provide a full report with regards to the RVM operator fees. And then I think just this one slight correction to Member Chacha. He said, I think he may understand that it reoccurred. It is the first year that we have that matter, but it will be addressed. It's only the one time that it has arisen, Chair. But we will address the matter, and thank you for that. Chair,
we understand where this was from.
The
first time that has been reported.
Yes,
because the CFO reported the matter. But it's not the first time
we know
that this has been happening. It was not reported to us last year.
Yeah.
So the point that I was raising is that it's the first time, thanks to you, CFO, that you are reporting the issue. It was not reported initially.
This is why it wasn't picked up. That's the question. So that's why it wasn't picked up, but that will be part of the answer that you're going to send us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair. And then, Chair, with regards to the government grant, the CFO can explain to that. Aligned to the question from Member Chacha is, will we be able to see the board ever being self-sufficient? And, Chair, that is a process that is also being addressed. Part of the legislative amendments contains amendments that will enable the board to derive certain revenues out of that. Once those amendments have been enacted, the board can then take a position and see this is its revenue, and looking at its own budget to see if there are any further gaps with regards to its funding, and then the exercise can be completed. So that is a process. But certainly the board is working together with Treasury to find a way where the board can become self-sufficient, Chair. I ask our CFO just to respond to the other members, and also just our human capital manager to respond with regards to the leave process.
Chair, just in terms of the leave, before Ms. Bauer will speak to that, is the leave, that you see, the expenditure is the movement in the leave provision plus actual leave payouts. Even if my leave days are the same, the leave provision will increase because that is based on your salary. So if I, for example, have 10 days, so my salary will increase with the salary increase. So that is that is part of the increase. In terms of
Okay.
That's not what I asked, Chair, with respect. I want to know what processes in place to monitor the liability, i.e. the leave?
That's a human resource will answer that question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Chair, to, then apologies to the member if I misunderstood his question. In terms of the increase in the staff wellness, the board now has a service provider, IKEA, that we pay on a monthly basis that we didn't have in the previous year. And in addition to that, based on recommendations from Mr. Grootbond that did our, I don't know, some change management program at the board, the staff of the board attended a 2-day breakaway where they got training, so that was also a significant amount. And then in terms of the government grant, the board would love to be self-sufficient, but until all the processes are not finalized yet, we are still dependent on government to provide that with funding. Thank you, Chair.
Last question on the leave plan.
Thank you, Chair. If you just want to understand the member correctly, the question is about how do we ensure that leave doesn't accumulate and become a liability, because leave is a right, so I was trying to figure out when it's the liability.
I understand that, and just so that we don't misunderstand each other, I'm not disputing the right to leave. I'm disputing the fact, or I'm stating that leave in your financial statement in a budget must be treated as a liability, because a person can resign at any point with accrued leave.
Thank you, member. Our leave doesn't accrue. Staff are reminded during February of each year what leave, if they don't take it by a certain time, could lapse. So there's never a situation where someone sits with 50 days of leave. We will never have that within the message.
Moseko?
Thank you very much. Just a short one. On page 86, there is, on 17, the medical aid company contribution. I see from 2017 to 2018, such a huge amount of it has changed. Is it more staff that came, and is it the, do you do the subsidy system, and what percentage is it the subsidy to the employees?
Thank you.
And is it total cost to the company, or the what, if you can tell us, please?
Chair, the increase in the medical aid contributions, that's correct. That is because the board in the current year introduced a new post-retirement medical benefit to the employees. So that increase is basically just a movement in the provision, because last year the board didn't have a provision, and this year the board has a provision, and therefore that movement is in the movement in this particular. So it's not actual money that the board paid, it's just a movement in the provision.
Member Weaver, say again. Okay. More information on that matter. Member Weaver.
Thank you, Chair. Page 86. Page 86. Investigation fees. Who was that paid to? The office paid for? Parking income. How do you make parking income? And it's actually reduced considerably. Then under that, it's number 15, I'm referring to, by the way. Other miscellaneous income. What is that miscellaneous income? Where does it come from? Defined contribution plan, employee-related cost. Defined contribution plan is what are they? Now, why have I got page 60 written here?
Come, member, you can't read like that. You can check what you want, and then we can just ask him to reply.
Investment income, yeah. Which bank are you using? Maybe that's the question.
Okay. Thank you. CFO.
Thank you, Chair. We're better with banks with NetBank, so that's in terms of that amount. In terms of the investigation fee, that is a fee that we charge to do actual the audits. So that's based on the number of the tables and the slots machines at the casino. So if they have 10 tables, it's a fixed amount multiplied. That's the one. In terms of the parking income, I think we that does get parking at the board needs to pay an amount of £100. So that's basically it. And then in terms of other miscellaneous income, that's an amount of £141,000. That is an amount that we received back from Momentum because one of our employees was incapacitated, yes. So we applied for that, and then for the 2 months, or I think a few months, we still paid his salary, and when Momentum approved it, it was done, it was back paid, so therefore they reimbursed the board, otherwise he would have paid 2,000 twice. I think, and then in terms of the defined contribution plan, that is just a nice word in terms of draft 25, that is just the contribution that the board makes in terms of the pension, the retirement fund.
Thank you, members. Is that it? Can we say thank you to the board? Okay. I must give Member Chatsam opportunity to thank the board now. Yeah. No, Member Makiti did already. Member Chatsam, do the thank yous quickly and then we're going to ask the board to leave. Thank you. Come, Member. Thank you very much. You want to say something?
Chair, to you and the members of the committee, we also want to give our sincere thanks. And I quite agree with Member Tata, we don't come here to fight with each other. We come here to exchange information, and we regard it as that process, Chair. We love robust engagement, and I think that's what we get here. And we exchange information. We are always ready to provide the committees, the oversight committees, because it makes governance from our perspective also that much better. So we welcome the interaction with all the committees, and we thank the members for the interaction with us as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. We're going to stay behind for our administrative work. Thank you very much. Thank you.